This week's parashah is Parashat Tzav. It's a difficult parashah to talk about and find significant inspirational messages from, but we'll do our best. Parashat Tzav can be, to a certain extent, coupled with Parashat Tetzaveh. They actually sound similar. Tetzaveh means to command, and Tzav means to command. And in Parashat Tetzaveh, we really read about what would take place, and ultimately does, in Parashat Tzav. That's the description of the Shivat Yemei Miluim, the 7 days of preparation of the Mishkan. So Moshe has instructions as to all sorts of ceremonies over the course of these 7 days of preparation of the Mishkan before Aharon and his children will do their worship in it. And as instructions are told to us in Parashat Tetzaveh, among them, very significantly, of course, the clothing of the Kohen Hedyot, of the Kohen Gadol, the Hoshen and the Me'il and all that sort of stuff. And then in Parashat Tzav, we read about, well, Moshe going about and doing it. So that's what I'd like to, for a few moments, take a step back and notice that in its larger sense, but then pick up on one particular and specific detail. So again, in the larger sense, there's a lot of ceremonies and there's dressing and there's putting oil as they once did, embalming and so on and so forth, and sacrifices, all which is done by Moshe. Moshe sets the ground for worship service in the Mishkan, which will then be done by Aharon and his sons. That's what Parashat Tzav, a lot of it, deals with in many details. What I'd like to, for a few moments, talk about, though, is how Parashat Tetzaveh, and then, well, the detail as it's fulfilled in one way in Parashat Tzav, describes that for Aharon and his sons, you should have crafted Moshe, you should have clothing. And the description of those clothing, and we've drawn attention to this in the past, we will again today, just in a little bit of a different direction, a different angle, they should be lechavod ultif'aret. That was the description. The parasha said, in Parashat Tetzaveh, Moshe, make certain that there are clothing for Aharon and his children, lechavod ultif'aret, for honor and glory, something along those lines. That's very significant. And it's very significant because clothing in Torah, clothing in life, generally speaking, have this coarse physical, material type of symbolism. The first set of clothing in Bereshit was, of course, crafted after rebellion, after sin, on your way out of Gan Eden. Clothing, beged, is even the word, is livgod, means to betray. A me'il is the same idea. It's a person who betrays. Me'ilah is the sin of betrayal. If a woman cheats on her husband in Parashat Naso, it's if she's tim'ol ma'al, she does an act of betrayal. Clothing then is beged, begida, me'il, me'ila. It doesn't sound all that flattering. And yet, the description of the pasuk is lechavod ultifaret. You should take clothing and craft it. We read in Parashat Tetzaveh, and it should be lechavod ultifaret. It should be for honor and glory in, so to speak, God's sanctuary. Not only that, do I mention that there's a certain irony to the description. It's that there's a purposeful usage of the same words, kavod, tif'aret, and clothing, in the story we just read last week of Megillat Esther, as Ahasuerus throws this lavish, ostentatious, bombastic party, feast, over the course of more than half a year. The pasuk describes that he's doing it beharoto, as he shows off. Et osher kibod malchuto, there's the kavod, ve'et yekar tif'eret, Gedulato, the same words, Tiferet and Gedula, or Kabod rather, are mentioned by Ahasuerus. Not exactly what I would associate with the Mishkan of God, and yet that's the description. And any time, and this is what I like to do, I conjure up the image of Aharon. Aharon is bedecked in royal clothing which speaks of grandeur. It's a little bit of a mixed message over here. So on the one hand, clothing to be seen as something that's evil, so to speak, representative of betrayal, of the coarse human way of things, being stuck in, well, this world, or is it alternatively to somehow represent kavod and tif'aret, but not the Ahasuerus style? And invariably, we always have the same message in the context of the Mishkan. That's what the Mishkan was in totality. It was taking course, this worldly involvement, engagement, and ways, and finding within them an opportunity for sanctity, for holiness. Take the same clothing, which do and did represent, so to speak, sin, and sanctify it. Take the same animals, which can and are used to worship other gods, and focus it at God. Take the same gold and silver and dyes and fabrics, which can and is used in all sorts of other pagan, idolatrous places, in the very feast of Ahasuerus, in the kings of people in this world, and turn it into a mechanism, a mode, a method to worship God. There's something very telling about that. It's a description.
Is that just the difference? Is that God just told them so?
God told them so, but again, it absolutely. So in other words, Serene says this basic difference. God commanded as opposed to you doing it on your own. More than anything, so maybe let me ask it, or let me point it out differently. How could God command that? Wouldn't you imagine God would say, strip yourself away from that? Come to this place and just contemplate, wear the most simple clothing you can. Don't adorn yourself. Don't bring animals. Just dedicate yourself to me. Instead, God concedes to a certain extent and says, well, I know this is, as human beings, what you're drawn to. Take that same stuff and focus it upon me. There's lots of musar from that. That's what I mentioned, korbanot, absolutely. It is, in the real sense, it's what we do in our lives. The Mishkan is a microcosm of our lives.
And
everything we do can and is focused in one of two directions. I can... Certainly, in terms of our character traits as well, the Gemara, as a matter of fact, has a funny description of who should be a mohel. It's a person who's drawn to, don't tell Maris Abraham this, it's a person who's drawn to bloodletting, or, excuse me, that's a positive as well, bloodletting or milah, it's a person who's, so to speak, bloodthirsty, a person who would be killing otherwise. Take that and transform it, turn it into something positive. You can and would and should say it with everything. Well, there's a very telling description then that the Torah is sending and lesson through that, and that is that this Torah, as we have in our lives as Jews, is so different than, call it, you know, the ideal of other religions. Whereas another religion might imagine that a life of abstinence, of staying away from anything, and asceticism, in which I'm most spiritual and pure when I'm not engaged in this world, the Torah says, no, take the same clothing, which represents engagement in this world, and find within it the same kavod and tifaret, which could and would be at a Hashverosh's party, but channel it positively. I'm not just telling you it's okay. I'm commanding you, says God. There's so much in terms of once you wrap your head around that hashkafa-wise in our own lives, certainly in terms of raising children, I experience it consistently. There's a tendency, and this tendency is taking him or her in the wrong direction. How do I capitalize on that? How do I take that and focus it? Sometimes it's not even quote-unquote spiritual or holy. It's just for the positive. They're so stubborn. Why don't we take that stubbornness and transfer it? They're so dedicated to that. Why can't we take that dedication and bring it to something else? I've said more than once, when I remember once asking one of a rabbi who I was very close with, I said, and it's true then and true today, unfortunately, I always want to know everything about everyone. I said, why is that the way? Certainly all human beings, but I think Avi Harari above and beyond. Unfortunately, and so he said that inquisitive nature was implanted within human beings. We can and should imagine either to be used negatively to get your nose involved in everything and just, or turn it into, I want to know so much about God. I want to understand his ways. I want to understand Torah. Again, there's a lot to be said for that. The clothing of the Kohen and Kohen Gadol represent that. That's kavod and tif'aret. That's a vision, a description of we don't need to ascend from this world to connect to God. We can and should find him within this world. It's with that introduction, I want to just read to you one statement from Rashi in this week's Parashah. Not like usual, we have a packet which we're going to read a little bit from, but the Rashi, ironically, is not in that. Rashi describes, quoting from a Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit, what Moshe was wearing over the course of those 7 days. Now again, based on that introduction, Moshe should be wearing, I don't know, Bigdei Kehuna. After all, It's so much a part of Kohanim that there's a statement in the Gemara that happens to be in a footnote on the page in front of you. It doesn't matter. In footnote 84 on the first page, it says, Bizman shebigdehem alehem, it says, four lines into those footnotes, kohunatam alehem. En bigdehem alehem, en kohunatam alehem. The Gemara Masechet Tzivachim says that a Kohen who worshipped, who did his service in the Mishkan or the Mikdash without the clothing, it was invalidated. Oh, this amazing thing. It's not just I'm conceding. It's that you need to be wearing this. Okay, so that being the case, of course, Moshe must have been wearing, maybe not Kohen Gadol, maybe it was reserved for Aharon, but something. Says Rashi, again, quoting from Masechet Ta'anit Daf Yod Aleph, Moshe Shimesh Kol Shivat Yeme HaMiluim, Moshe did the worship all 7 days, Behaluk Lavan. Haluk Lavan means a white, I guess it would be shirt, tunic of some sort. That's it. A simple, singular shirt he was wearing. Which, again, without interpretation and explanation, catches me at least a little off guard. Not what I expected. Moshe is not a Kohen. That's very significant. However, he's doing actions as if he's a Kohen. So what I want to now, over the course of the next, I don't know, 20, 25 minutes do, is to draw a contrast between the role of the Kohen and the role of a Moshe. Go ahead.
I have a question. I always got confused about this because Moshe and Aaron are brothers. Yes. Why is Aaron a Kohen and Moshe is a Levi?
Wonderful question. Would you know it? This class will answer that question. But that's exactly the point. So we're starting from now and noticing and realizing such a difference between Moshe and Aharon. Aharon is the chief Kohen, the Kohen Gadol. Moshe, his brother, is the leader. We associate Moshe most with kingship, with monarchy, not as a Kohen.
Can you just clarify for us that the Kohani came from the Levi tribe only from a certain family?
Only from Aharon's family. Yes. Aharon's family were the Kohanim. Moshe's family were not.
But I don't understand. They're brothers coming from the same. Like, I mean, I'm a Levi because I'm born. My father was a Levi. So.
At a certain point, there had to be, which is when God makes this thing called Kohanim, okay. And that cutoff was Aharon and below.
Okay. So
right
that's
now, and the ironic thing, and this is a summer conversation. Pinhas, who was already alive when they made this designation, according to our tradition, wasn't a natural Kohen. He had to earn it later, even though he was alive and from the descendants of Aharon. But again, there was a cutoff. So yes, anyone who today is a Kohen means they came from Aharon. Anyone who's a Levi means they're from the Moshe side of things, right?
Right,
you only had Eleazar and Itamar and children. That's a great question. It's a great question, especially taking into account later on. It's a great question from a practical standpoint. I don't know. It means they were very busy. I don't know. Not 100% certain. But again, those are the roles. So we're really speaking to the roles and remembering significantly that the role, you know, I mentioned earlier, just matter-of-factly, that when I envision people in Torah, I try to have, maybe it's natural, a picture of them. Aharon's always wearing the clothing. Again, for me, a Pinhas is always holding a spear. They didn't live their lives with spears, nor with the clothing. But that's an important picture to have, at the very least, of Moshe, of Aharon. Aharon is where... Who's Moshe, by the way? I should mention already, because it'll help us. Where's Moshe? Moshe is that iconic picture, in my mind, at the top of a mountain, holding the Luchot. That's the Moshe. That's a very significant difference already. I'm going to start the idea before we even read it inside. The idea being that the role of Kohen versus role of, call it Melech or Moshe, are diametrically different. And personalities were, as a result, very different as well. Aharon, will begin with that and develop that initially. Aharon as a Kohen was supposed to be, and it's clear from the Torah, beyond just doing the worship for the people and engaging with the people, teaching the people. The Kohanim historically were supposed to be teachers. That's clear from later in Sefer Devarim, so many leadership roles, they were the people individuals. They were the people personalities. They were the people who were engaging with the people. That's Aharon. Moshe was separated from that. A king, historically, kings had different roles. Som tasim alecha melech shetehe emato alecha, is the derasha of the rabbis. The king is supposed to inspire fear, trepidation, awe. You didn't even necessarily see him all the time. He certainly weren't engaging in conversation. That's the Moshe personality. Very different. What's that? Well, maybe not. Maybe clothing, we're giving away the punchline already, but the clothing, as usual, Sarit. Maybe the clothing, which is engagement in this world, right? Engagement in this world with regards to, I'm not at the top of a mountain. I'm not a lawgiver. I'm not the personality who's disassociated from the physical world. Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm the Aharon, the one who does engage, whose job it is to make peace amongst people, whose goal, whose ambition, whose mission is to drive everyone into this worship of God. Of course, I'm wearing the clothing. I'm represented by the clothing. I need to have my hands dirty by this worldly stuff. We need a balance between these two. There's no question. We need someone who speaks just ideals, who is that spiritual personality. Well, at the same time, we need the individual who, as Kohen Gadol, different than maybe we associated with in the past. We thought the Kohen Gadol was the most spiritual. Was, but it was the spiritual one who's speaking with the people and dealing with the this worldly stuff. So let's give it a minute or two to develop then along those lines with some of the rabbis' descriptions who I think bring us along this path. So first and foremost, so Moshe's clothing. Moshe is wearing these white clothing. In front of you, so the pages are from first this book. It's called Chumash Gur Aryeh. It's written by Maharal. Maharal was a very important rabbi from Prague. For better or for worse, known instead of his commentaries on the Torah and Machshava for... anyone? What's Maharal known for? A golem. Everyone believes, based on a fictional story some 200 years ago written or so, that he crafted a golem, a life force, you know, and that's what he's well known for. He was a tremendous thinker some over 400 years ago, and he has this commentary to the Torah called Gur Aryeh, so we'll start with that. He says it here on the right-hand column, the third line, of, meaning the second paragraph. V'zehu lema'alat Moshe ki timsah ki kohen גדול ביום הכיפורים היה משמש לפני ולפנים בבגדי לבן בלבד. Catch those words. He says, who wore white clothing in the Mishkan? The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur when he went into Kodesh HaKodashim once during the day. At one point, there was one set of clothing for one individual every year at the most critical spiritual moment of the year, when the Kohen Gadol went all the way into this inner sanctum once, he was wearing white clothing. That's the Moshe clothing. It's almost as if, and we'll develop this in his words a little bit, Aharon's general job was to be serving the people, was to be grounded in this world. Once a year, at the moment where you're, so to speak, looking at God face to face, you're in front of the Aaron, that's when you wore the absolute white clothing. That's when those clothing were most simple. He'll use the word a lot of times that it's pshitut. Pshitut means simple, but it means it's not combined with anything else. Maharal, who pays a lot of attention to colors throughout his commentary, as do many other Jewish mystics, says white, not saying, although he says these words on the page, I don't think he means them in the scientific way. He says it's not a color. I know it's a combination of all the colors, maybe it's a shade, but I don't think that's what he means. What he means by that is, when you're to talk about something that's clean, something that doesn't have any complications, something that is white, it's the backdrop that you paint onto. So the clothing were white. He goes on, he says, well, the Kohen Hedyot does wear white, but all of them wore that. He says, this is special clothing of Kohen Gadol of Moshe. So much so, it was special and unique clothing. The Kohen Gadol couldn't wear the same white shirt the next year. Once a time. In other words, we're dealing with the most pristine, not engaged, not involved in this world clothing. That's what the Kohen Gadol and in turn Moshe wore over the course of those 7 days. Do you follow? Again, clothing that are adorned and filled with colors and trappings and adorned, all that sort of stuff, this worldly. Moshe, 7 days, Moshe as a personality, spiritual, disengaged in that respect, connected, so to speak, to God. The Gemara goes on, and Maharal cites this and says that Moshe's clothing, it's a strange description right there, it didn't have what's called an imra. An imra, I think, is like a hem. It's the part where it's sewn together. Rashi in the Gemara says that whereas once, until today, like, sleeves are made from separate pieces. So you sew those and then you sew them together. Moshe's clothing over the course of those 7 days was made out of one sewing action. Again, a description of simple, not connected to this world, not pieced together from the physical. And when you think about something that's spiritual, it's the most wholesome, the most altogether. It's this world that we have all sorts of different things going on. You talk about spirituality and holiness, that's all, I just see God, something along those lines. Anyway, the description then of Maharal, to repeat it, for Moshe Rabbeinu over the course of 7 days was altogether different than Aharon. Aharon will be wearing those beautiful clothing. Aharon will be the personality staunchly grounded in this world. Moshe will not. I want to pause for a second and remind us of Moshe's ultimate failure as a leader. He was the greatest leader, but he ultimately speaking fails. How does he fail? We know it. We're actually going to read the beginning of that parasha this week, but it's at the end of Parashat Chukat, where the traditional approach is he can't engage in speech to the people. Right? That's his failure. Instead, he strikes and brings something direct. Moshe can't speak to the people normally. We read in his early life that he's not capable of speaking at all. Maharal, on the next page, if you go to, well, over here where it says at the top of Kafhet, Maharal advances this theory in another book. Yet another book of his, this one, Gevurot Hashem. In Gevurot Hashem, Perek Kafhet, he questions a very simple question. Again, we're going a little back and forth between these personalities, purposefully so. We spent time on Aharon, now we're focusing on Moshe. He says, Moshe was born with what the Torah seems to describe as a speech impediment. His kvad lev, kvad peh, kvad lashon, has a heaviness of mouth. The greatest leader, the chosen prophet, has a speech impediment? Really? So there's lots of lessons to be derived. Can you imagine? His presence was so strong that he overcame it and so forth. The suggestion of Maharal instead, it wasn't so much a speech impediment. It was that he wasn't a speech earthling. What does that mean? It means that when we think we're most spiritual, when we feel, when we're emotive, and we're intellectual, that's when we hit our highest spiritual points. It's when we need to get it across to other people that we use our mouth to get it across to others. Rambam, as a matter of fact, is a famous statement, says prayer in an ideal sense would be all intellectual or maybe meditative. We use our mouths because we're human beings. Moshe was, so to speak, not so human. He was at the top of the mountain. His mouth was not attuned to regular conversation with people. Moshe's failure in the scheme of things was that he hits the rock instead of speaking to it, we're injecting as well, portraying his inability to be in this world. Who takes over from Moshe? We say this all the time. Who is the leader of Am Yisrael, ultimately speaking? Someone named Yehoshua. Why Yehoshua? Yehoshua is a person of the people. Yehoshua is the one who stays at the bottom of the mountain when Moshe goes up. Yehoshua fights wars with the people. Yehoshua is, so to speak, the leader that they need for conquering the land. Moshe is the leader they need in getting the law and bringing it down from the heaven. It's not so much a fault. It's a reality. That's the point.
It's
we read it as a punishment, but it's more a reality. He brings them through 40 years and is the greatest leader. He brings them through a place called the Midbar, which shares the word Midaber, something about speech, but he's not a speaker. So much so, Maharal suggests that the Gemara has this funny description in Masechet Nidah. The Gemara says, I imagine you've heard of this funny description, that when we're in the womb of our mothers, we are studying the entire Torah, and we know the entire Torah. And as we come out, an angel comes and hits us on
the lip.
On the lip. at which point we forget the Torah. That's what that imagery, what a funny description, suggests. Maharal, that's what the rabbis are implanting. It's a Platonic notion that it's based on Plato's thought that any intellect, any wisdom we're achieving in this world kind of is just a retrieval. We're not gaining new information. We're going back in time. It's a philosophical notion. But what's with the touching the lips over there? The touching the lips, he suggests, is how are you going to forget Torah? Well, Torah is my most spiritual apex. That's when I'm most connected. When I become a speaker, when I plant my feet in this world, when I achieve a physical side, when I'm no longer all intellectual and emotional, I'm rather a human being. Well, that's the touching of the lips. Now you're going to come out and start using your mouth. You're going to become an earthling. You're going to be less angelic than you were in there. You're going to be forgetful. You're not going to be able to retain the Torah in its entirety. Do you follow? So again, that's the Moshe who stands apart from that. The Moshe is the one who's kind of still on the top of the mountain. So yes, it's a little tragic. It's a little sad. The question also is whether Moshe was ever supposed to have a whole separate conversation about to lead them into the land.
Yeah, he was supposed to. Whole life that he hit the rocks, he was punished and couldn't leave forever. So it's just.
But you know the counter to that, and I say it all the time during the summer and during the year and whenever I have a chance. Can you imagine? I mean, just put. I know he was so righteous. I know God treats the righteous, you know, kehut ha-se'ara. But can you imagine? Dedicated his entire life, lost his family as a result of that, and so on and so forth. Did nothing wrong, it appears, and made one small mistake. Boom, no entrance into the land, unless you're just the wrong personality. Mm-hmm. I'm still, my oldest is 16 years old. I believe it or not, I'd love if he stayed in my house my whole life. At a certain point, he's going to have to move out. Mm-hmm. He just is, because it will no longer be healthy to have that nurturing, I'd hope, parental involvement in his life. He's beyond that. He needs different influences. He needs different. When I graduated high school, a rabbi who I was very close with, he wrote an inscription in the book that he gave me. And in it, he effectively wrote, I'm kind of like in Hebrew, in a flowery, poetic Hebrew, I'm handing you over to the next. So I was like, that's terrible. What are we done? We're finished? I was like, no. He said, listen, I was emotional as I wrote it, but it's a description of reality. He said, it's reality. You need to go out. You need to spread your wings. I don't imagine. He never imagined I'd be coming back to Yeshiva Flash. You know, like, he never imagined I'd be. But like, it's a description. So Moshe, it is tragic because we feel bad for him. But in the scheme of things, his leadership was specifically so great because he brought them through a spiritual growth in 40 years in the desert from a nation of slaves who were so grounded in this world, material, physical, backbreaking labor, to a nation who received God's law, who were hopefully coming closer to achieving some modicum of spirituality in their lives, at which point he had to hand it over to the leader who's going to be a physical presence forward for them. That's what they're doing, 14 years of battle and dividing the land. But that's the Moshe Rabbeinu, as opposed to Aharon. I want to repeat again. Aharon is an altogether different personality. Aharon is the parent in the home who's caressing you, who's speaking to you and understanding you in this world. The Aharon is wearing the clothing. He's bringing you atonement, is he not? Think for a moment about the concept of teshuvah. Teshuvah means I did wrong. I spat in your face, God, but now I expect you to wipe that clean. Seriously? Why? That doesn't make any sense, because I'm a changed person. But you sinned to me. You spat in my face. It takes mercy. It takes accepting the human fate of existence to say, okay, you're a human being and I'll forgive you. That's not a Moshe personality. So much so, by the way, what happens after the sin of Chet Ha'Egel? Well, Aharon is involved with the people. He might be stalling them, but he's talking to them. Moshe? Absolutely not. Shattering Luchot, screaming at them, turning to the Levim, telling them to stab individuals. That's the personalities. Those are the different visions. One is the wearing this clothing and saying we have to engage, we have to understand the people in this world. The other one is standing up for ideals. Don't think that any of us are going to be one and not the other. We need to carefully, in every aspect of our life, you know, carefully scale and weigh those. We, on the one hand, have ideals. We have certain things that you can't pass, or you can't, there's a boundary that can't be passed over. On the other hand, we are human beings. We have to deal with that human reality of life. I'll just take you a little bit further in terms of this. The Gemara's wording, and Maharal makes sense of this as well. On the next page, I guess we ended up reading less of it. I summarized, but I think it's okay. You can read it inside and see. Hopefully, I'm not skewing his words. He mentions as well that the words used for the hem is the word imra, aleph, mem, resh, aleph. Moshe's clothing was white, and the next statement was it was unhemmed, and it had nothing connected to it. And the word imra, he cites from a midrash, can be interpreted as it is over there having to do with clothing, or the word imra can be referred to as our speech. Moshe's clothing had no imra. It was not real clothing staunched in this world. Just like Moshe, writes Maharal, wasn't a regular speaker. As human beings, we are speakers. That's how we manifest our physical side of life. We don't just think, we don't just feel, we don't just express our devotion to God and to one another through feelings and thoughts. We express it and get it out into the open through speech. Moshe didn't have that. Aharon, the teacher, Aharon, the priest in the Mikdash, who's serving the people, wearing the clothing, he's the one who speaks more than Moshe. He's the one who wears those clothing. Just in terms of summarizing this, on the very last page, and I think he writes it or said it most beautifully, is something from this book. It's called Reflections of the Rav. It's from one of Rabbi Soloveitchik's lectures. And the name of the lecture, you could see at the top, it's called Engaging the Heart and Teaching the Mind. Long after Maharal, Rabbi Soloveitchik, passed away in 1993, had a similar thought. He doesn't apply it to everything we just discussed, but he does distinguish between Aharon and Moshe's personalities. And listen to how he writes this in the second paragraph over here on page 167. Moshe, or Moses, was a model of the Rav. He was, I called it king, it was a Rav. Aharon of the Rebbe. What's the difference between a Rav and a Rebbe? Rebbe is the Hasidic model, Rav is the Lithuanian one. Rebbe is the one who tells you stories and makes you feel good and sings songs with you. Rav is the one who tells you what the halakha is, who gives you the sharp insights into the Talmud and halakha. Okay, here we go. Moshe was a kvad peh, a nonverbal person, not given to small talk. So he doesn't get as spiritual as Maharal, but he says, easily socializing and extensive negotiations. You went to him and you asked him, what's the halakha? And he told you. Which, by the way, I don't remember if we in this class talked about this. Maybe we did. That was a lot of what his father-in-law, we suggested in Parashat Yitro, was trying to teach him differently. They're lined up for you. Oh yeah, Beatrice helped us a lot with this. They're lined up for you to get the law. Maybe you want to get a little bit more than that. Get a relationship. Not Moshe's personality. Remember a dozen times, he's Hoten Moshe, the father-in-law of Moshe, and we suggested that that's because his father-in-law is telling him, develop a relationship through law. Let law not just be as cold and as black and white as it, but that's Moshe. Moshe is, you come to him, you call him for the, I'm not with one of the women here. So there was once a woman who had a very serious question, a serious question that's well beyond my pay grade, probably ever will be. But I said, let's call a specific rabbi. I said, we'll call him on conference call. I'll tell him from the beginning, we're both on. I just need to warn you, it's going to be a big rabbi, quick phone call, and you're going to feel that it's not sensitive, it's a certain personality. So we called, and sure enough, I started verbalizing it, I said, I'm on the line, she described it, and within like, I don't know, negative 2 seconds, the conversation was done. He hung up, and she was like, I said, I told you before, and that's the way it's going to be, I'm now going to butter it up, I'm going to make it feel good, but that's the personality, it's a personality trait, and that's why I call him, he sees it, he understands, not that he didn't take into account, that's the Moshe Rabbeinu. What that, no coddling, no expression of the emotions, not that they're not there. If I felt he had no emotions, this great rabbi, I wouldn't be calling him because that's part of understanding the people. But it's not expressed in that respect. That's the Moshe. He was Rabbeinu, a scholar. Rabbeinu, he's the scholar, a teacher, uniquely spiritually endowed, who communicated tersely what he had to say. Tersely got to the point like that rabbi. He was a teacher primarily to Yehoshua, the elders, the Zekinim, and to others who were qualified to understand the intricacies of Torah and Halakha. The contrast between Moshe and Aharon was noted by our sages. Listen to how the Gemara in Masechim Menachot says it. Moshe's guiding principle was, the strict law is immutable, which means, Yikov Hadin Etahar is the way the Gemara says. There was no compromise. The Gemara describes Moshe as you came to him and he told you what to do. Who was Aharon? Aharon was, let's make a compromise. Aharon loved and pursued peace and sought to reconcile man with his neighbor. He was Ohev Shalom Virodev Shalom. Moshe, Aharon was the one who lied to the one side and then lied to the other side. They both want to make peace. Why are you lying, would Moshe say? To which Aharon said, because that's how we bring them together. Meet them where they are. Understand them for what they're at. Aharon loved that. The Midrash adds, Hesed and Shalom, this is Aharon. Emet and Tzedek, this is Moshe. Listen to the words, Hesed, loving kindness. Shalom, peace, Aharon. Emet, true, truth. Tzedek, righteousness, justice. This is Moshe. That's the difference. The lips of the Kohen preserve knowledge. It's a pasuk. And the pasuk says in Malachi that Sifte Kohen Yishmeru Da'at. That's a very important pasuk about the Kohen being the teachers, as I mentioned in the past. That's who they were supposed to be. Emphasizes Aharon's lips. Do you hear that? Moshe was the opposite, the non-speaker. Rabbi Soloveitchik says because he didn't chatter too much. We said he furthermore, says Maharal, lips, speech by definition defines engagement in this world. In truth, the clothing as well, there's another word that rabbis use sometimes for a hem. It's the word safa. And safa also means lips. His clothing had no imra, no safa, because Moshe had no lips and no speech. Moshe was the white-clothing individual. He begins, by the way, 7 days of starting the Mishkan, bring us back to that. Who's to do that? Where is everyone? Nobody's in the Mishkan. Whose zone is this? This is the zone at the top of Har Sinai. That's Moshe's zone. He prepares the Mishkan. Aharon and his sons will invite them in and let everyone come to the Mishkan. They're the ones who engage. Moshe does it when there's nobody else around, when it's, you know, his rendezvous with God and just the Kohanim and getting them prepared. He's the teacher who's giving you all the principles. Aharon's the one who's the, I don't know, the community rabbi done right, let's say. His persuasive style and closeness to the people. His title was not Rabbeinu, but HaKohen, which signifies a minister of God. We may note their different reactions. Their Egel HaZahava. How do you like that? He does it. Incident. The one denouncing, exhorting, and enlightening. The other working along with the people, procrastinating, hoping against hope to diffuse the frightened and confused masses in time for Moshe's return. Right? That's the difference between them. Now, it's not to say that Aharon, quote, was right. Aharon is rebuked in Parashat Vayetchanan. Moshe says God got angry at Aharon. That's the point. That's the danger with all of this. We sometimes imagine you have to be a personality. You have to be an idealist, or you have to understand people. I have to be a parent who puts my foot down, or I have to be the parent who understands that. Sometimes yes, and sometimes no. I have to in my own life. I have to... That's the tightrope that we're always walking, isn't it? That is the team. The ideal is we each work out that within ourselves. More simply spoken than actually done. They were the team who pulled it off.
How does this relate to like Torah Shebaal Peh and Rashi
Bichtav? Entirely. Moshe represents Torah Shebichtav. It's not about a speech transmission. The Kohanim were supposed to be the teachers. They didn't, ultimately speaking, they fail at that in corruption, but they could and should have been the leaders of Torah Shebaal Peh. Yeah. Instead, they're not. They fail. Eli and his sons fail with the people, by the way. They fail at that, and as a result, it becomes others. But Kohanim could and should have been the Sifte Kohen Yishmeru Da. That's who it's the Rabbi Akivaz, whom we mention all the time, is the leader of Torah Shebaal Peh. He's the other side of Moshe. He's the one speaking to the people, teaching them what's his great principle. Ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, ze klal gadol ba'Torah. What does it mean to be a Torah Shebaal Peh individual, a person who explains the Torah and teaches it? Well, understand the people, speak to them. Sure.
Person, but the Kohen Kohanim started off with so much power.
Interesting. And by the way, Moshe as well starts off in the palace, never fully engages in the troughs, whereas Aharon is with the people from the beginning. Again, Raquel, it speaks to your point from the beginning. You said, why is it that Moshe is not the Kohen and Aharon is? So maybe you're asking in the technical sense, but let's ask about personalities and talk about their origins. It makes so much sense. Moshe escapes for decades from the people. Terrible, horrible, not so much so. In terms of achieving spirituality, he removes himself from the people and finds God in ways that nobody else with the people could have. Aharon, who's dealing with that Egyptian reality, he's the one who gets the people. They meet each other and combine forces. That's what it is. Again, bringing us back to this parasha, that one description of the rabbis, the Moshe clothing in contrast to Aharon is so telling. The no hem, the no additions, simple, spiritual, white, no adornment, worn like the Kohen Gadol once a year, so to speak, no imra, no speech connected to the Moshe. Aharon, in contrast, is wearing the clothing of Lechavod Utirafaret. Both approaches, writes Rabbi Soloveitchik, must somehow be combined. Here it is. There's the challenge. The people, and again, I want to, and I'm sure you've experienced it as parents and in your own leadership roles, I experience it all the time in the gripes of the people, where a person will say to me, depending on my reaction to a situation, that you're not either standing up for an ideal over here, whereas I say, well, I'm trying to meet them where they are, or you're not meeting us where we are. You stand. There's always that. So I wish I could say I had all the solutions here in this class, but at the very least, we're describing these two personalities as something we're all striving for in our own lives. There's certain distinctions that we need to make. This is something that is an absolute in my family, in my life. This is who we are, identity. Can't step over this. This is something we're striving for, and we're meeting ourselves and those around us in getting there. The people must not only be taught by instruction, but also by warm and friendly guidance. A loving permissiveness can only be destructive. A harsh accountability, alienating. We read, how about this, the tragic. Again, we spoke about Moshe not being allowed in. Listen to the description of the deaths. The contrast in the deaths of Moshe and Aharon. And remember, Moshe, we remember, lo kam ki Moshe od. Nobody else was like Moshe. What was his greatness? That God spoke to him directly. What was he not? Panim el panim. What was he not per se? He was not per se speaking to the people. He was le'enei kol Yisrael, the final words in the Torah. They watched him. They adored him. They saw in him godliness. What's the death of Moshe? We read that when Moshe dies, Vayivku b'nei Yisrael et Moshe. They cried for him. Only the men who had studied Torah with him, suggests Rabbi Soloveitchik, appreciated his greatness and sensed the extent of their loss. But on Aharon's death, the text reads, Vayivku kol b'et Yisrael. Not just B'nai, not just the leadership, not just the scholarly, the elite, everyone, all the children of Israel, men and women wept, united in mourning because, as Rashi explained, right there, he pursued peace and made peace between man and his neighbor and between wife and husband. Nowadays, Rabbi Soloveitchik concludes, the Rav, the contemporary teacher king, has absorbed many of the qualities of the Rebbe, not only teaching, but coming close to the people. The Rebbe, representing the modern teacher state, now also emphasizes scholarship and the teaching role. What he writes at the end here is that we've lost this sort of distinction. When he grew up, even, he grew up again in Lithuania. He has a description, it's not his written things, it's in transcriptions of things he said to his students. He said, my father never, he describes, and it's a jarring, if you don't, and we don't, we are so distant from such a mode of relationship. He said when he parted with his father at the time of World War II, potentially never seeing his father again, his father said something to him like, go and be successful. No hug, no kiss, no I love you. Now for him, it was all that. But that was this, it was a completely, so he's basically describing, you know, he's writing this, like they're saying this in the 70s, we don't have that reality any longer. There's some sort of combination. You're going to fail if you don't combine that. I say it all the time with regards to our child rearing, with regards to our, I was once a rabbi of a synagogue, and they, a few of the, they're not old timers, they're not old, but they came from the old country. So they came from Halab, let's say, in the early 80s. Said to me, in Halab, in their time, the rabbi, if you did wrong, you were excommunicated, you were publicly shamed. I said, because it worked over there. It worked. Where were you going? You're out of the Jewish community. You're going to be devoured. You're going to be killed outside. I said, you want me to do that right now? They said, okay, no problem. We'll go either to no synagogue at all with no problem. We'll be financially stable. We'll move off to, I don't know, wherever. There's no such reality. There needs to be some. So I want to say ideals. I want to speak about, I can't excommunicate. What sort of efficacy is it going to have? So that's what he writes. He says, and on the flip side, he said, in the Hasidic world, once upon a time, it was more about, let's just touch the common people. Can't really get away with that any longer either. He says, there's a more of a specific direction and pointedness. Go ahead.
It's funny, I was studying my daughter for a Humash test. So it was actually the beginning of Moshe. When Hashem comes to Moshe and tells him, you're going to lead the people. And first, he's like telling him, like, I'm not the guy. And like even further, like, he was very defiant. Like, Hashem was like, okay, you're going to take the stick, you're going to put it, it's going to turn to this. And he still didn't believe in himself. And it sounds like...
By the way, what's God's great? Again, so Raquel brings us back to the original conversation with Moshe. I want to shed light on exactly what you just described. He says, it's not me. And he says, what am I going to tell the people? What's God say? God says to him, tell him, what's Moshe's mission? Get them out of Egypt to worship God on this mountain, Har Sinai. That's your mission. We say, what if... The Moreh may have even told you to teach that to your child, which is okay. Differently, God said to him, no, you're going to take them out and bring them into Israel. Never says that. It says, you're going to take them out and teach them to worship at this mountain. That's who Moshe was. That was Moshe. The back and forth as I read it is, yes, it's humility of Moshe, but it's more than that. God, well, one second. Do you want me to go in, stage a rebellion? Ah, look at my muscles. They're not so... And he was strong, by the way. But, you know, I'm not doing that. Do you want me to go in and be persuasive in dealing with Paro? No. Let Aharon do that. He knows people. What do you want me to do? This is what I want you to do, Moshe. Take them out. Bring them to this mountain. I'm going to give you my law, and you're going to worship me. Could you find a better person than that? Do you follow? It's exactly the engagement then, and it's exactly the way it plays out in this week's parasha, right? In other words, now you have the Moshe before the people enter the Mishkan. That's the time for the hermetic, saintly leader, the one who knows exactly how to do it, the one who's going to teach the Kohanim. These are the instructions. The one who's going to do it before there's the social atmosphere in the Mishkan. That's Moshe's zone. The one who's not going to wear the fancy clothing. That's the Moshe. The second we open the gates, the doors of the Mishkan on day 8, that's where Aharon steps in. Aharon steps in and he's wearing those clothing. To bring it to, you know, the Megillat Esther story as well, because we mentioned that briefly. Megillat Esther is entirely an exile story. Megillat Esther is entirely a story of clothing. There isn't there's no mention of God. There's no surprise then that Megillat Esther's critical moments are Vatilbash Esther Malchut. She's about to enter into Ahasuerus and she puts on clothing. Because at a lot of points in our life, we need to see this worldly stuff for our success. We need to play the game in this world. You can't just be praying to God, put on the... And Mordechai, in the moment at the apex of his success, he's walking through the streets wearing the monarchy clothing. First by Haman leading him, and then at the end, just walking through. It's the it's exactly the personality. The rabbis are a little bit critical of Mordechai, but that was the role of Mordechai. They say, no, he got too politically involved. The way I always understood it, he needs to be that role. He needs to be the Aharon, so to speak. In short, Parashat Tetzaveh and Parashat Tzav are linked one to the other in the respect that you see the Kohen's role. Underlying the Kohen's role, that short midrash which Rashi cites, Moshe's role, who was Moshe, you can kind of just from contrasting their clothing, the diagram, the picture of what they looked like in those moments, if you conjure up their images, it describes to you altogether different personality and directions through life and in decisions that we make. There's the Aharon, I have to engage, and we do, and I have to involve, and I have to find the sanctity in the blood, and in the clothing, and in the lust, and in the desire, and in the inquisitive nature that I unfortunately have, just dedicated to Torah, dedicated to the right things, right? And then there's the Moshe. Maybe there are moments where we need a, that's not for me. Maybe there are moments where this is who I am and I'm not getting involved in that. You want me to go there and be the role model? No, that's not for me. You want me to appease that? No, that's not who I am. There's that careful and steady walking on a fine line throughout our lives in everything that we do that the Moshe and Aharon personalities really portray to us, and I think are fulfilled through the rabbi's description of their clothing here in Parashat Tzav. Again, we should only strive. I wish I had, and I wish maybe one of you do, all the instructions and directions to when and how. At the very least, it's time for contemplation in our own lives at all points. What are those lines where I'm the Moshe? Where are the circumstances where I'm alternatively the Aharon?